When we arrived at the restaurant, Clive did all the license plates in the parking lot and then, elaborately, with a bow and a flourish, let Deborah enter. Ladies first. He looked at me with some uncertainty as I followed them to the table. Are you joining us too? When I offered him the wine list, he looked it over and exclaimed, Good God! Australian wine! New Zealand wine! The colonies are producing something original! How exciting! This partly indicated his retrograde amnesia. He is still in the 1960s, if he is anywhere, when Australian and New Zealand wines were almost unheard of in England. The colonies, however, was part of his compulsive waggery and parody. At lunch he talked about Cambridge. He had been at Clare College, but had often gone next door to King's for their famous choir. He spoke of how, after Cambridge, in 1968, he joined the London Sinfonietta, where they played modern music, though he was already attracted to the Renaissance and Lassus. He was the chorus master there, and he reminisced that singers could not talk during coffee breaks. They had to save their voices. It was often misunderstood by the instrumentalists, seemed standoffish to them. These all sounded like genuine memories, but they could, equally, have reflected his knowing about these events, rather than actual memories of them, expressions of semantic memory, rather than event or episodic memory. Then he spoke of the Second World War. He was born in 1938, and how they would go to bomb shelters and play chess or cards there. He said that he remembered the doodlebugs. There were more bombs in Birmingham than in London. Was it possible that these were genuine memories? He would only have been 6 or 7 at most. Or was he confabulating, or simply, as we all do, repeating stories he had been told as a child? At one point, he talked about pollution and how dirty petrol engines were. When I told him I had a hybrid with an electric motor as well as a combustion engine, he was astounded, as if something he had read about as a theoretical possibility had, far sooner than he had imagined, become a reality. In her remarkable book, so tender, yet so tough-minded and realistic, Deborah wrote about the change which had so struck me, that Clive was now garrulous and outgoing, could talk the hind legs off a donkey. There were certain themes he tended to stick to, she said, favourite subjects, electricity, tube, stars and planets, Queen Victoria, words and etymologies, which would all be brought up again and again. Have they found life on Mars yet? No, darling, but they think there might have been water. Really? Isn't it amazing that the sun goes on burning? Where does it get all that fuel? It doesn't get any smaller, and it doesn't move. We move round the sun. How can it keep on burning for millions of years? And the Earth stays the same temperature. It's so finely balanced. They say it's getting warmer now, love. They call it global warming. No. Why's that? Because of the pollution. We've been emitting gases into the atmosphere and puncturing the ozone layer. Oh, no! That could be disastrous. People are already getting more cancers. Oh, aren't people stupid? Do you know the average IQ is only 100? That's terribly low, isn't it? 100! It's no wonder the world's in such a mess. Cleverness isn't everything. Well, no. It's better to be good-hearted than clever. Yes, you've got a point. And you don't have to be clever to be wise. No, that's true. Clive's scripts were repeated with great frequency, sometimes 3 or 4 times in one phone call. He stuck to subjects he felt he knew something about, where he would be on safe ground, even if here and there something apocryphal crept in. These small areas of repartee acted as stepping stones on which he could move through the present. They enabled him to engage with others. I would put it even more strongly and use a phrase that Deborah used in another connection when she wrote of Clive being poised upon a tiny platform above the abyss. Clive's loquacity His almost compulsive need to talk and keep conversations going served to maintain a precarious platform, and when he came to a stop, the abyss was there, waiting to engulf him. This indeed is what happened when we went to a supermarket, and he got separated briefly from Deborah. He suddenly exclaimed, "I'm conscious now. Never saw a human being before. For 30 years. It's like death." He looked very angry and distressed. Deborah said the staff calls these grim monologues his deads. They make a note of how many he has in a day or a week and gauge his state of mind by their number. Deborah thinks that repetition has slightly dulled the very real pain that goes with this agonized but stereotyped complaint, but when he says such things, she will distract him immediately. Once she has done this, there seems to be no lingering mood, an advantage of his amnesia. And, indeed, once we were back in the car, Clive was off on his license plates again.